how the government plans to spend nearly $1 trillion.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. It's been a big week for talk about farmers and food on Capitol Hill. Both the House and Senate Agriculture Committees have passed separate versions of the Farm Bill, which is overdue for renewal. The Senate gets a new crack at it on Monday. Marketplace's Chrissy Clark has been checking the latest.
The biggest issue in both the Senate and the House has been around the size of the federal food stamp program. It's grown by a lot in the last several years. About 1 in 5 Americans receive food stamps at the latest count. Many of these people are elderly or working poor families with children. So in the House, there's concern that people are becoming too dependent on food stamps. And in their bill, they've proposed more than $20 billion in cuts to the program. The Senate has proposed smaller cuts, about $4 billion.
And where does the Obama administration come in on this?
Well, we spoke to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack this week, and he argues that food stamps are a source not just of help to those in need, but a big economic stimulus. He says it helps farmers, obviously, who are growing a lot of that food.
And as more people can buy more at the grocery store, that generates opportunities for grocers to increase employment. For those who truck produce and product to grocery stores, those in the processing and shipping and packaging and warehousing of food products.
Vilsack says that every dollar spent in the food stamp program generates $1.84 of economic activity.
Marketplace's Chrissy Clark, thank you.
You're welcome.
There's talk in high places about the Fed ratcheting back on policies it hoped would add pep to the wheels of commerce. Economist David Weiss is at Brown University these days. Good morning, David. Great to catch up.
Good morning.
Help me with the logic here. John Williams, not the classical composer, but the president of the Federal Reserve in San Francisco, says the Fed could ease off on its long-running stimulus sometime this summer. Does that make you feel more optimistic about the economy?
Well, it makes me feel that the Fed feels more optimistic, and I guess that's a good sign. They've been talking about this idea of just gradually tapering off, sort of like drug addicts, rather than going cold turkey. And I think it makes a lot of sense to start it maybe a little earlier, do it more gradually, and, you know, if necessary, reverse it.
You're also seeing some signs of life in, of all places, Europe?
Well, not many signs of life for the economy. We just got the GDP data from Europe earlier this week, which showed recession continuing. But people are feeling, I think, a little more upbeat about Greece in particular, that things may be settling down there. Ireland is doing a little bit better than a lot of us expected it to do. And maybe the worst is over.
We had a slight uptick in car sales across the European continent reported today. There's something.
Yeah, there's something. I'm not quite sure what caused that. Part of it, I think, may be weather-related, that we've had, unlike here, we've had a rather good spring over there.
They're also talking about Easter falling at a certain place in the calendar, and that might have helped these figures.
Yeah, except people buy Easter bong. It's not Easter cars. I'm not sure cars sales really tie to Easter that much.
We'll watch Europe quite closely. David Weiss at Brown University, thank you very much.
Thank you.
As the Senate debates comprehensive immigration reform, thousands of lobbyists are on the march. The Sunlight Foundation estimates as many as 3,000 of them. Some you'd expect, restaurant owners, farmers, and construction groups. And then there are the not-so-usual suspects. From Washington, Marketplace's David Gura reports.
You may not expect to find lobbyists focused on immigration issues in Baltimore this weekend.
And they're off in the Preakness. Brilliant break for Bodie Meister. And I'll
at the Pimlico Racecourse. That's right, the American Horse Council is lobbying Congress on immigration reform.
Well, immigration's been an interest for a long, long time.
Jay Hickey is the president of the group. It represents horse owners' interests here in Washington. The horse industry, he tells me, is worth $102 billion, and low-skilled workers from overseas are an important part of that.
We use H-2A agricultural workers on a temporary basis on our breeding farms and our training facilities.
Hickey says those visas are limited, and his group wants more of them. These workers do jobs, Hickey says, that are specialized and physical, and try as horse owners may, and they do try, Hickey says. There aren't many Americans who will do those jobs.
You just can't find them. And if you can find them, they don't want to do it or they're not qualified to do it.
You'll also find lobbyists focused on immigration issues in concert halls.
Just
just like music is everywhere in our lives, it also shows up in all kinds of places in national policy.
Heather Noonan is a lobbyist for the League of American Orchestras. She says her group cares the most about what are called O&P visas for soloists.
The non-immigrant temporary work visas that are required to bring those artists into the United States to perform.
Noonan says it's her job to make sure visas for those performers are available.
When the curtain goes up at 7 o'clock on Friday, the artist needs to be there and the audience is expecting that they'll be there.
The League of American Orchestras is lobbying to make that visa process as efficient, affordable, and accessible as possible. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
Texas tends to have a light touch when it comes to government regulation, but not when it comes to brewing beer. Yet lawmakers today are looking at loosening the rules for the makers of craft brew. Gigi Duban reports.
The rule at Texas breweries has been take only memories. People on a tour couldn't buy beer there, but the new legislation would let breweries sell pints, and it would let brewpubs sell their beer to grocery stores.
Craft breweries in the state have a hard time getting solid footing because of the restrictions in allowing them to have access to market.
That's Scott Metzger, who negotiated the bill on behalf of craft brewers. He says Texans do drink a lot of specialized brews. It's just not beer made in Texas. And come on, there's no shortage of Texas pride.
It just goes to show that I think Texans really, really want Texas products.
Nationally, states are placing fewer restrictions on craft breweries. Jeffrey Kleinman is editor-in-chief of BevNet.com. Compared to other states, he says Texas is a little behind the curve.
It's a really big state, and it's got a, you know, more slowly maturing craft beer market.
This law, he says, would definitely help speed that up. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
And in a world of globalized culture, some things still have trouble permeating America's consciousness. Every year, countries from Europe and beyond compete for best pop song. The Eurovision Song Contest this weekend will be watched religiously in many parts of the world, sometimes with appalled fascination. This time, a Microsoft researcher is using an algorithm to predict a big Eurovision win for Denmark tomorrow. Only Teardrops by Emilie DeForest. We'll be hearing that in your dreams. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.